Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. It's hard to imagine a world where we leave future generations with fewer rights and freedoms. Since the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills aimed at blocking people from getting the essential sexual and reproductive care they need, including abortion. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves access to care. And with supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 175 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland, live from an undisclosed location that is not my home in Atlanta. And joining me on the podcast one day late this week, by the way, that's my fault, not my guest's fault. Joining me is Eric Cole. What's up, man?
It's okay. You can blame me. It won't bother me. I'll just make up some reason why I couldn't do it last night or something. But you know,
this one's on me. I did tell people, I found people don't always follow my Twitter account. So I let people know that it was going to be a day late. And listen, the Braves didn't play today. So it's basically like it's arriving on time because you're not missing anything.
It's like an extra bit of Braves content.
Yeah, just a day late. But it's Monday evening. It's about 8 o'clock. It's about, I guess, 9 o'clock Eastern as we're talking at this point in time. It's 8 o'clock where I am. But not too much going on and nothing really happened today. So just act like this is Sunday and we'll go from there.
we'll just pretend.
Yeah. We'll talk about the games and what happened this week. There was not a ton of just news outside of Ender and Ciarte coming back. So I want to start with Ender coming back after a long, long absence as sort of the only headliner of the week. There is some trade deadline stuff that we'll touch on in a minute, but not really anything new on the rumor front. So let's start with Ender. He came back on Thursday. He started, which scared some people, including me a little bit, but I did say at the time, and a lot of people said this, as long as he's not starting all the time, it's totally fine. And he sat Friday and Saturday, started again on Sunday, which is fine. If he's going to be used as a part-time player, I'm okay with that. But what did you make of him coming back? Obviously, it was going to happen at some point, but they elected to go with the larger bench, and they went with the smaller bullpen. They got a little bit creative. They sent Kyle Wright and Tukey down on Thursday after the game, and then called up Wes Parsons and Talking Chop favorite Patrick Weigel.
First of all, I was obviously very happy to see Weigel get called up just to get, he didn't see any action and, there wasn't anything really to it other than just a kind of a call up on paper where he was around. But, he's a guy that we've liked a lot for a long time. It's really nice to see a guy who has an injury and kind of comes back and works his way back to getting to the major leagues. From a guy who follows prospects a lot, it's just always nice to see that happen. Parsons is always a fun story too, just because he went from like an undrafted guy who, got called from like an independent Woodback League to, actually making the major league roster and has seen time in the major leagues. I think both those guys could feasibly be helpful in the bullpen this year. They're not like slam dunks or anything like that, but they're both guys that we like a lot, and hopefully that they can contribute. Obviously, Weigel got sent back down. He already kind of announced that he's kind of heading back, but. It's a tough thing with Ender because on the one hand, him being in the lineup as a bat kind of makes me cringe in a lot of ways. It's not as bad against righties as against righties than against lefties, but it's still kind of cringeworthy. But Austin Riley has not looked good at the plate either, so it's not like I feel like there's a like. Someone that like he was like if Austin Riley was doing what he was doing that first month he was up. And they brought back Ender, and he was taking a significant amount of playing time away from Riley. Then I would obviously be more outraged. But if Riley's struggling, and they're trying to play some matchups a bit, and trying to showcase Ender a bit, whether that be for a trade or seeing if they can get some real value out of him, trying to recapture that second half magic that he seems to always conjure, then I get it. It wasn't something that like made me go, oh God, here he comes, But at the same time, he doesn't look particularly good at the plate. It was nice to see him draw a walk earlier, this week. But when that's the bar of what my excitement should be, then maybe I'm wondering why this guy is, in our lineup that's been really good. But at the same time, you know, Austin's not exactly lighting the world on fire right now. He's kind of hitting that, you know, the league has adjusted to him, and now he's got to make the adjustments, stop swinging out at pitches out of the strike zone and kind of make them throw strikes. Because right now he's really pressing, trying to do some things, and he shouldn't be.
Yeah,
you know, it's just kind of how I feel.
I have some, I guess, mixed and kind of scattered shot thoughts on Inciarte. Number one, he was always going to come back, so this is always going to happen, and they were not going to just bury him. Like, my big thing that I've been talking about offline with people, and not really so much on Twitter, is that Inciarte is owed some serious money. Like, he can't just be, like, people are talking about him as someone that you could just, like, get rid of, and you can't. I mean, maybe they could trade him for nothing at this point in time, but he's owed $7 million for next year and $8 million for the 2021 season with a club option after that. And the club option is whatever, but he's owed $15 million over the next two seasons after this one. So you can't just cut him. You can't DFA him. Like, you have to just – that was always going to be a part of the discussion with Inciarte, is that they're going to use him. And obviously, defensively, we saw even in this little stint of time over the weekend – he's useful defensively. Obviously,
absolutely.
You know, his defensive prowess is not, he's not quite the guy he was at his absolute peak defensively, I don't think, anymore. But still, he's a good defensive outfielder and is the best defensive center fielder on the roster. So that is useful. On the other hand, you know, you talked about Riley. It's important to note. I probably should talk about this last week, honestly, when we talked about Ender a little bit coming back. Riley, in the last 40 games, this is since June 5th, and I honestly didn't notice until earlier this last week how bad it was, but the last 40 games, his slash line is 211, 269, 408, which is a 677 OPS. That's pretty brutal. Granted, it's 160 plate appearances. It's not that big of a sample size, but if you didn't know that he was just murdering the ball for the first couple weeks he was up, he's been ordinary or worse since then. So, you know, having Riley in the lineup every day is interesting. I do think that, you know, I'm always on record, and I think I'm consistent with this as much as I possibly can be, that a prospect of his caliber, you want him playing every day, wherever he's playing. I'm not really in favor of, like, platooning Austin Riley, but, you know, it's okay to not play him every single day right now with the way that he's playing. There were some people calling for him to be maybe sent to Gwinnett for a little while to clear his head. I wouldn't, like, scream and yell about that if they did it, because I think him playing every day is important, and that's probably a better option than him, you know, toiling away in some weird part-time role. But I still like playing Austin Riley. He still has a lot more, you know, raw upside talent than Inciarte does. But they do have some other options. I mean, they have Charlie Culberson. They have Matt Joyce. They have Adam Duvall, who is a famous option lingering in the minors, who I know you and I have been pretty high on Adam Duvall, for even when people hated him a year ago this time, when people were just really mad at Adam Duvall.
Yeah, they really, really hated him.
And now he, I mean, great, it's Gwinnett, but he's been great this year. And, you know, we'll see. And honestly, you have Markakis, who is playing every day that probably shouldn't be playing every day. Like, he's certainly an option that should be in the lineup more often than not with the current roster construction. But Markakis has been bad against left-handed pitching this season. So if you want to start shaking it up, I think Snicker he has the ability to do that with the talent on the roster. When you have guys who are platoon heavy in, you know, Inciarte and Joyce and Markakis. Unfortunately, those guys are all left-handed batters. And Riley.
Yeah, that does make that a little trickier.
And Riley's the other side. And Duvall is a platoon-ish option as well, but he's still in the minor. So the only guy you know is going to be in the lineup every single day is Ronald Acuna, and everybody else is kind of a mixed bag. That can be a good thing because you have good depth, but you have to rely on your manager to maximize it and all that stuff. But, you know, back to Inciarte real quickly, I do think he's very useful. If he had started against Patrick Corbin, I would have probably driven back to Atlanta and lost my mind. So as long as he's not playing against left-handed pitching, it's okay. Like, if he's starting every once in a while, or, you know, even semi-regularly against righties, I'm okay with that, as long as it's not coming at the expense of Ronald Acuna, which it's not going to, obviously. So, you know, using him properly is very, very important, but Inciarte does help this team. I think in some ways the hate's almost gone too far, to the point where he's almost underrated. His bat is what it is. It's not a good bat. I don't think he's as bad as he was early this year, by the way. I do think he's a slightly below a league average bat, like, which is where he's been the last couple of seasons, like a 90 WRC plus kind of guy. Not a good hitter. He's the worst hitter in the lineup. As long as he's hitting eighth in the lineup, it's totally fine with his defense. He's a useful piece, but he shouldn't be playing every day. And I think I want to say I'm definitely encouraged by the quotes from Brian Snicker and the way that he has deployed him so far. He played 2 out of 4 games. He was basically not being treated as an everyday player. And as long as that's not the case, I'm okay. And he definitely helps this roster.
Yeah, there's definitely positives to having him. Having a guy like that who can be a defensive replacement in center field and doing, and who can also play center field, because, I mean, while he was hurt, the options backing up Ronald Acuna were rough.
Yeah, it's non-existent. And by the way, I wish they would have, and I wish they would continue in the future to try anyone but Markakis in right field. That's part of the issue here, is that they don't let guys like Culberson and Camargo play right field. Like, they have to try somebody else there, so that if Markakis is not a primary option, like that's I guess the one minor defensive snicker is that they haven't really played anybody else there. So I'm not sure who they would want to play there. Like, every once in a while he'll take the day off and it's Camargo or it's whatever. But extended period of time, we're at the point now where Markakis probably should be kind of platooned. Like, it's not maybe not full stop, but I guess with left-handed pitching, you would almost certainly rather have Culberson or Camargo in right field, wouldn't you? I mean, it seems like it's pretty obvious to me. I don't know.
Yeah, and I just think that in general, considering what happened in the second half last year, and we've kind of seen it was actually fairly hysterical for me that there was like a period before the All-Star break where, like, please give Markakis days off. He hasn't been hitting well. Then they give him days off, and, like, there's a segment of fans and whoever that are, like, outraged that we're sitting Nick Markakis, perennial silver slugger and gold glover. He sits for two games, and then he comes back and he's hitting pretty well, and everyone's like, see, this is the guy we took out of our bat. And I'm like, you gave him some days off. He's older. Just give him some time. Not saying cut the guy. We're saying give him days off so that he doesn't fade in the second half, because we need the – look, if this pitching staff has taught us anything, is that we need – all the runs we can get our hands on.
I mean, he's hit righties this year. I mean, full stop. Yeah. I mean, Markakis offensively has been better than I thought he was going to be this year. He has a 109 WRC plus. That's very solid. It's just more splits than he's had in the past. Like, his WRC plus against left-handed pitching this season is 64, which is bad. It's a small sample, very small sample, which I understand, but it's not been good. And if you factor in his defense, which I know the gold glove thing is a thing, but no metric thinks he's a good defender at this point. Like, there's not a metric out there that says he's a good defender. So we can argue about this all day long. At the very least, he's not a game-changing positive. That's how I'll leave it for now. It's not anger everyone. I think he's a negative. But if you want to say he's just fine, okay. But he's not NCRT in right field. He's not a big positive in right field. So I'm all for playing him more often than not, because his bat has been good against right-handed pitching and really good overall. But, you have other options who are, I think we can probably say with some confidence at this point, better hitters against left-handed pitching than Markakis is. And that's Culberson and Camargo. And if Duvall was on the roster, he would be too. All those guys are better against lefties than Markakis. I do still think Markakis is, I guess, the right-hand starting pitcher is one of your best three options in the outfield. So yep. Starting him, he should still start more often than he doesn't, given the current roster constraints. But I think the easiest way to give him rest and keep him fresh, as you're talking about, is to just not play him against left-handed pitching. He's still going to pinch hit. We all know that Snicker's going to hit him in every single game to keep his streak alive, and because he's a good hitter against right-handed pitching. He's going to hit in every game, but I think it's a very, very easy solution. It doesn't have to be foolproof necessarily, but, against Patrick Corbin, he just should sit. And that's fine. It's not an indictment of Markakis, and I think they want him out there more than we want him out there, but he's played pretty well. I mean, his overall numbers are not great, like, war-wise, because his defensive metrics are not being treated well, but as a bat in the lineup, he's been just fine. Should he be hitting fifth? No, he shouldn't be hitting fifth, but he's still one of the best eight hitters on the team. So having him in the lineup regularly is still a good idea. It's just he needs to be sparing, as you said, against left-handed pitching, and just giving him rest, keeping him fresh, and we've seen that. I mean, it's anecdotal, but I think we can probably all agree. Maybe not all agree. I know a lot of us probably can't agree, but I think you and I can agree. Having him out there every single day without fail is a bad idea, but still more often than not, he should be in the lineup.
I will say this, which has been high comedy for me. I've probably, and this might just be a symptom of, like, the people who choose to engage with me, but I've probably heard more people openly say that we need to consider not starting Josh Donaldson every day than Nick Markakis. And Donaldson's been in. I just don't understand what games people are watching.
Yeah, like, I think it's cooled insane. Off. I mean, maybe not. I have seen. I think
it's still there.
I think Chris Willis retweeted a couple people that were crazy. It's still there. I do think it's cooled off considerably from where it was 2 months ago on Donaldson, yeah. Where people have started to see the light, maybe get a little bit quieter. But at this moment, he's second only to Freddie on the team in WRC Plus for the season, and he's already sitting at 2.9 Fangraphs WAR for the year.
Passed Freddie
in July. Yeah, he's passed Freddie in WAR. He's a little bit short of Freddie on just pure offense. But yeah, I mean, he's been excellent. We don't need to talk about this. The guys who should be in the lineup every day. I mean, if you're resting Donaldson, it's to rest him to keep him fresh. It's not to platoon him. The guys who should be in the lineup every single day, unless you're giving them a day off for rest, are Acuna, Donaldson, Freeman, Albies, Swanson. Those guys should play every day unless they're resting to keep them fresh. Those are the five guys who need to be in the lineup every day.
And even Dansby is honestly an open question because, I mean, his bat's kind of cooled off.
Yeah, it's just because he's a shortstop. I mean, there's not really another option there that's better than him, obviously. I agree, like, giving him a day off every once in a while would not be a bad idea. It's just a situation where you don't have an option that's comparable to him to play.
Sure.
But I'm with you. Yeah, I agree. Like, the top four are the pretty clear top four with the way that Ozzy's been playing recently. And Dansby just gets that because he, you know, has the combination of solid bat and good glove at shortstop with nobody else to play there. And then you play Culberson, but he's a step down defensively pretty clearly from Dansby. So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty easy. And I think you see, obviously, the catcher spot, you just mix and match those guys. And everybody else plays whenever it's advantageous to play them. I mean, I was going to ask you about the bench. Are you okay with running this bigger bench now that Inciarte is up there? They've been going with this bigger bench now. I'm on board with that and go with the shorter bullpen. It's a tough sell in some ways because the bullpen is not a huge strength for you, but you have so many guys who are definitely major league players that cutting bait on one of these guys it just seems weird. Like, there was some talk about Camargo being optioned down. You know, he's too good for that, but I understand why that's being said because he's the only guy with options. Matt Joyce has been good. Duvall can't even get up. I mean, they have kind of – it's a good problem to have to be pretty deep on your bench, a problem that they did not have last year, as we famously chronicled throughout the season. But are you okay with this deeper bench and kind of just rolling with an extra guy on the bench now?
I'm fine with it just because the Braves have a AAA affiliate that's really close. You know what I mean? If you need to make roster moves up and down and get that Gwinnett shuttle cranked up and, you know, like they can even – if they need to rotate guys in and out, they have enough of those guys where, like, they don't have to worry about, like, you know, like calling him one guy up and then, you know, sending another guy down and then all of a sudden you run into, like, those weird roster restrictions. They have enough guys where if they need just arms, they can probably do that. It kind of stunk that, you know, we had Grant Dayton, you know, break his toe because he was playing catch with Chad Sabatka. And
that was weird, man. That was strange.
Yeah, I want to know what the story was there. Like, was he, like, trying to run down a ball that Sabatka throw, or did he stub his toe on something?
I think you need to report that when you're down at the ballpark this week.
I'm heading up there tomorrow. I'll ask, so what exactly was the injury? Because it seems kind of a strange one. You know, they have the arms that they can rotate enough to keep guys fresh and just to have some fresh arms in the bullpen. It's not something I'm super concerned about. And, you know, since Weigel's already come up, he could make that move again later on, you know, once he's able to come back up. And, you know, there's ways they can do it while still having fresh arms in the bullpen and having this larger bench, which kind of gives them more options. And I hope they utilize all these options.
Yeah, using the options is important. But,
Having them sit there is not very helpful.
Right. I'm not going to go down the Snicker rabbit hole today. I do think that we will learn about him in the future, more in the future, considering all the options that he has at his disposal. This is now a tougher team to manage than it was in the past because you're not just filling up a lineup card. At least you shouldn't be filling up a lineup card the same way every single day, which can challenge the manager. We'll see how that goes. But, you know, it's a good problem to have. Better baseball players.
I will say this. I understand wanting to run out your quote-unquote best guys against – like, this is a weird stretch where they have the Phillies and the Nationals coming up again.
Sure, I get that.
But this two-game set against the Royals seems like a prime opportunity.
Yeah, I mean
– give some playing guys, some playing time to some other guys.
It is a delicate balance. Like, the guys like Donaldson, who you're literally just giving rest to, because there's no argument to not have him in the lineup unless he just needs a day off, that's a little bit trickier. It's the situations where you're talking about platoon edges that becomes a little bit easier, I think, to navigate. Like giving Austin Riley a day off against a right-handed pitcher every once in a while. Giving Marquez days off against left-handed pitching. Maybe stick Culberson in there every once in a while just to get him going a little bit. So, I mean, it's not a exact science. I'll be the first to say that. And these are tough decisions. But, you know, having depth is a good thing. But it just needs to be used effectively, and we'll definitely see how that goes in the near future. That's probably the best way to say that for now. But Ender, part-time player, and that's the way it should be. That's probably the best way to put that.
Yep, I agree.
Okay, we can, in fact, we're going to take a break right this second, and we'll come back with more from Eric in just a few seconds after this short break from our sponsors.
Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. Your body is your own. That's why Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Today, lawmakers who oppose abortion are challenging Planned Parenthood. Affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. Planned Parenthood believes that health care is a basic human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common-sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies. They also work tirelessly to oppose the onslaught of new policies aimed at interfering with personal decisions best left to patients and their doctors. They won't give up, and they won't back down. You can join Planned Parenthood in the fight to help make sure that the next generation can decide their own futures. The organization needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
All right, Eric, we're back. And before we get to some content on the actual games that happened over the last week, the deadline's coming. It's about, what, 8-9 days away now. Real fresh rumors since last week. Same cast of characters. There's been some innuendo on guys, but no real reporting that I've seen. Anybody or anything you have your eye on necessarily? I mean, obviously all the focus has been on pitching in some ways, but you know, like, what's the biggest need in your opinion? Who's your favorite target? Anything that you wanted to like throw out there on the rumor front? Because it's kind of dead, but it's also getting so close that we have to talk about it in some way.
Well, yeah. So my overall thought is I am not particularly enthused with this. The guys that we know that are available, that trade market is not something that really has me enthusiastic. Like, let's go get this guy. Like the teams that you would want to get that are obvious sellers. A lot of them were obvious sellers last year, and they got rid of a lot of their assets. And then you have a few guys who are available, you know, whether it be Marcus Stroman, you know, the Tigers have a few guys, whether it be Shane Green, or if you're looking at a guy with some control of Matthew Boyd, you could look at Seattle and, you know, squint your eyes and see some guys that would be interesting there. The problem is that there's so many teams that are buyers right now that what I worry is that the rentals that would be – There are definitely guys that are upgrades for this roster. And again, I think the only real needs that need addressing are possibly in the rotation and definitely in the bullpen. And it seems like there's enough traction to this idea that the teams that are selling are trying to sell package deals to increase the return. And that would include, you know, like a starting pitcher like Stroman and then a guy like Ken Giles or a guy like Bumgarner and pairing him with Will Smith, et cetera, et cetera. I worry that if that's the case, combined with so many teams being in contention, I mean, basically 3/4 of the National League is within shot of a wild card spot. And combine that with American League that isn't quite as bad, but still very, very thick with contenders, that I worry that the bidding for those types of packages just might not be worth what you're getting back. I think that a lot of these guys are small upgrades. And as a result, I mean, yes. Would I think Matthew Boyd be an interesting piece? Yes. I also think he's going to be very expensive. And, you know, there's talk of, like, Marcus Stroman wanting the Blue Jays are trying to get the Chris Archer type package back for him.
That. Weird.
And I'm just like,
I mean, it's kind of funny that reporting caused a lot of people to, like, reply about Chris Archer not working out for Pittsburgh. And it's like, okay, that doesn't really matter here. Obviously, he's been bad in Pittsburgh. But that doesn't mean that Stroman would be bad. Like, they were not comparing the pitchers. It was comparing the return for him. And Archer commanded a big time return when he was traded. It was kind of a surprise how much they were able to get back for him at that point in time. Stroman's a good pitcher. I mean, same with a lot of these guys. They are upgrades, but it's a good and kind of ever present question right now is like, what's it worth to you? Because you know the Braves could be a World Series team this year. Like,
very possible.
I've talked about this at length in this space and other places. I think the Dodgers are clearly better than the Braves are, but you know, there's definitely an argument. It's being made all over the internet. I think Jeff Schultz wrote about it. I believe today. Like when you're this close to theoretically being able to push for a chance at a title, there's an argument that you just go and you go all in, and you know, responsibly go all in. But you have to be active when you're this close to a title, and I totally understand that. And you have to weigh that against the notion of prospect cost and you know control of the guys that you're acquiring. If you're acquiring rentals, then it's just for the season. And that's, you know, that puts some pressure on yourself in the moment, because if you don't win, and honestly, I mean, just reality states that the Braves kind of no matter what they do, they're not likely to win the World Series. You know, the more likely outcome is that they're not going to win the World Series. That's just the nature of the beast when you're talking about pretty much any sport, especially in baseball. They could add, you know, Max Scherzer. Would they be the World Series favorite, like more than 50%? Probably not. I mean, maybe. Maybe he'd be close, but he's not.
They'd be among the favorites.
I mean, like, oh, they would be, but like, I mean, like 50% or more is what I'm saying. Like,
yeah,
you know, kind of whatever you do within reason, because they're not going to get someone as good as Max Scherzer. That's just the extreme example. Whatever they do, it's going to help them, but it's not going to make them a 80% chance to win the World Series. So there's risk here, regardless. So that's the calculus here. It's who are you going to trade for? How much control do they have? What are you willing to give up? And in a trade market, the team that gets the player usually overpays, because there's usually a bidding war, and
yep,
the team that wins the bidding war usually overpays. Now, does it usually, at the end of it, does it always mean that you overpaid in retrospect? You know, 3 years from now, is it going to look like an overpay? No, but in the moment, if you win, quote unquote, a bidding war, that means you traded the most for that player, in theory, anyway, unless you're doing with the Marlins, because the Marlins are weird. But other than that, you would think that you're giving up a pretty commanding package, whether it be to the Giants or the Blue Jays or the Tigers or whoever else, the Rangers for Mike Minor, like whatever it is, you're probably paying an uncomfortable sum for someone. Like, it's not going to be 100% usually, unless it's the Dave Stewart trade and with the Diamondbacks. There's not going to be 100% approval rating from the fan base. Somebody's going to think that you gave up too much. But when you're this close to a title and you project to be a 95-win team, there's a real big argument to just go and make a move and make yourself better, because this is not a foolproof pitching staff at the moment. I think that's the one thing almost everyone agrees on, is that the pitching staff needs an upgrade somewhere, whether it be rotation or bullpen. That's kind of the debate, but everyone is on the same page that they have to get better to win the World Series.
Yeah, and I can't stress like how difficult this trade market is, because there are upgrades out there, but like some of them are fairly marginal. You know, you can squint your eyes and say, I wonder if maybe the Braves could make Marcus Stroman better. You know, obviously Madison Bumgarner has this playoff resume that everyone seems to quote ad nauseum, and ignoring the fact that the pitcher of who he is right now.
The same guy he was when he won the World Series.
Plus he has that no-trade clause that he negotiated into his contract so that he could negotiate with the teams he'd be trading for. And while you might be wanting the rental Madison Bumgarner, what he might want is, if you want me on your team, you're going to have to extend me.
And you don't want to do that.
And you don't want to do that.
At least at market value. Obviously, there's a point where you'd want to do it. But that's, right. You know, he's the most famous person that the Braves have been linked to. He's also a rental, and there's, as you mentioned, there's always things in play. So, like, you have the guys who are probably more marginal upgrades, like Stroman or Mike Minor, who's a polarizing figure. I think he's just good, but we'll see. The guys who are like that, who are not as good, but they're under control for multiple years, are really appealing. Because if you're the Braves, you're still a young team. You're not going all in. Like, you're not this last hurrah kind of team. You're trying to push in your chips for this year, but knowing full well that a lot of your roster returns next year, and you have a lot of young players and flexibility to where the control really helps you. So it's a really complicated thing, and without like full-blown rumors, it's hard for me to be like, yes, trade for X player, because you don't know what it's going to cost. We could just kind of talk about in theoreticals, but Bumgarner is that one's just super complicated, but they all are in different ways. I mean, it's the rentals versus the multi-year guys, and how much better is Marcus Stroman than the Kevin Gausman we saw yesterday, and all these questions that you're getting into, and they're hard to answer. I mean, it's kind of funny as analysts. It's like, okay, tell me who they trade for, and then I'll tell you how I feel about it. But that's not that easy.
Well, see, and that's the thing, right? Like, case in point is the Cleveland Indians, right? They have this Twins team that's come out of nowhere and was thrashing them to start the year. And then you start thinking, maybe you could get them to part with Trevor Bauer. Now, that's an arm that makes a big difference. And now, does that make you World Series favorites? You don't really know, but he's a guy, he's a frontline starter. I mean, some people can call him ace if they want to. I think that's reserved for about 10 guys in the league, maybe. But he's a frontline starter, and he's owed some money, so you'd think that the Indians, with their payroll constraints, combined with the fact that they seemed like they were going to be falling out of that race, that, you know, he would be a guy that you could feasibly target. It would require a significant prospect return for the Indians, and that's something that you can entertain. But now they're only three games back in the AL Central, so you don't even know if that's even a possibility. And combined with the fact that they're going to get Corey Kluber back from that broken arm from, like, a horrific line drive that he took, which, like, was genuinely kind of gruesome to look at and watch unfold on TV. But you look at the options that are available, and, you know, do you honestly, like, I think that 20 teams are going to be calling the Tigers and asking about Matthew Boyd.
They should. And he's not an ace, but he helps you, and he's under control. Like, it's just what it is.
And you're also banking on a guy who has a half a season of a breakout year, and you're going to be bidding against 19 other teams to get him. How much of an upgrade is he? He's under control, absolutely, but what are you having to give up for him? Like, you're probably going to have to give up one of your top three prospects to get him. Do you really want to give up Drew Waters for Matthew Boyd? Do you really want to give up Christian Pache?
I don't think so. I mean, the reporting from the local guys, I think it was Gabe, said this, that if they had to guess, Pache is the one guy who would surprise them if he was traded. So it seems like maybe Waters and Anderson would be the guys you would use if you were looking for a top-tier trade package. But Matthew, if the Braves traded either Waters or Anderson for Matthew Boyd, people were going to revolt.
Oh, absolutely. But at the same time, there are other people at the other end of the spectrum that are saying that they would be fine with the Braves trading Drew Waters for Madison Bumgarner, and they do not think it's an overpay.
That's silly. It's just silly. Yeah, I mean,
but do you see what I'm saying? Like, it's just like this perception of value, and like the market value for guys like Waters and Pache is very high.
The biggest thing with Bumgarner, honestly, and the divide with Bumgarner is people that are thinking A, that think he's still the pitcher that he used to be, and B, that are really, really, really valuing his postseason experience. I'm using quotation marks. And that, I mean, that matters. I mean, the guy's been incredible on the biggest stage, and you can't discount that in full. But I'm not paying the triple premium of a top-tier prospect for that guy for 3 months of that guy. You know what I mean? Like, if he was still the pitcher, if he was the pitcher right now in the regular season that he was in his absolute prime, then yeah, you give up that kind of prospect because he's that good. But there's nothing in the recent past that tells you he's still that pitcher. Like, maybe he finds it again because he has the pedigree. I'm not saying he can't find it again. I'm saying you cannot treat him in a trade hole as if he is the prime World Series Madison Bumgarner. Like, maybe he has it, maybe he doesn't, but he's not that right now. There's no evidence of that. I'm sorry. There's just not. And so that, but you know, it's the perfect storm of he's just famous enough where everybody has a take on Madison Bumgarner, and they're envisioning the guy who was the hero of the World Series, because he was legitimately heroic in that World Series. He was incredible, but that's a long time ago, man. Stuff changes in baseball. He's not that guy anymore.
Yeah, he gets older. Like, these things happen. Father Time is undefeated, and he had to throw three games in that World Series. Has had multiple injuries since then, and hasn't been the same guy in terms of velocity, peripherals, or any of that stuff. You know what I mean? Like,
if he was under control, if he was under control in the way that Matthew Boyd is, or that even Mike Minor is, I would understand it a little bit more. But he's a rental. I mean, and he's a rental. It's just the reality of the situation. You cannot pay Drew. If you think Drew Waters is as good as some people do, including people on our staff, if you think he's a top, indeed, 50 prospect in the baseball, is that too low? Like, where do you have Drew Waters in baseball?
Top 50 seems fair.
If you think he's that, you don't pay that guy for 3 months of Madison Bumgarner in 2019. Because Bumgarner, again, he's a very solid pitcher. He would really help the Braves. Like, no one's saying he wouldn't. Even in his, you know, he's cooled off in the last three seasons. He's still a guy with an ERA in the mid-threes. Like, he's still a very good pitcher. But it's a lot, man, for 3 months. It just is.
Look at the price that the Dodgers got Manny Machado for. That's really all. Like, the Dodgers gave up a top 100 guy and, like, a couple lesser prospects. And that got them Manny Machado.
And Manny Machado is a lot more valuable than Madison Bumgarner.
Yes.
A lot. Not close. Like, I'm sorry. I mean, I know people don't like Manny Machado and have takes on him, but the in his prime position player is a lot more valuable than Madison Bumgarner. I'm just, it's not even really a discussion for me. And to your point, like, the Dodgers got, you know, the Dodgers paid less than Drew Waters basically for Machado.
Pretty much, yeah.
A year ago. So we'll see. I mean, that's one scenario, and Anderson's the other guy who is those are the two guys that seem to be like the top chips that are available. Pache seems to be, at least according to the report, and the guy who the Braves are not wanting to trade. And I mean, Eric, let me put it this way. If I'm asking you now, since we're giving our opinions, this is a podcast format. Okay. Is there a player that we know is available that you would trade Drew Waters for?
That we know is available.
So Stroman, Minor, Boyd, Bumgarner, one of those guys that's widely available in trade. Would you trade Waters for any of those guys?
No, I wouldn't.
I didn't think. I thought so. I mean, and again,
Boyd is the closest just because of the amount of control you have over him. And if you firmly believe that what he is right now and what his breakout has been translates, yeah, then I would understand it.
I mean, it's kind of funny. If Stroman had Boyd's contract, I would do that.
Sure.
You know what I mean? I think Stroman's a better. I think Stroman is a safer bet as an acquisition. Maybe he doesn't have the super duper upside, but he seems a lot safer to me than Boyd does. But Boyd has the extra control, and that's what you're paying for. Is the super cheap control for the next couple of seasons?
Yeah. And again, I would respect the position if you truly believe that what that guy is been this first half. That's what he's going to be for however long you have him under control.
If he's that, then it's worth it. Yes. I agree.
But I'm not willing to make that bet. Yeah, I'm not willing to make that bet.
Now, there's too much risk to just assume that. I mean, if you think I agree. I mean, if you're the Braves or any team, you're going to trust your own evaluation of a player. But there is always some risk. Like,
I have a question for you.
Sure.
Would you trade for Zach Wheeler right now?
I mean, I don't.
He just went on the injury list.
The medical thing is just like, I mean, if you trusted your training staff and you thought he was going to be healthy, then sure. See, and he's probably a better pitcher than the rest of them. I mean, do you think he's the best pitcher available?
Before he got hurt, he
was pre-injury.
I mean, Scott was that was Scott's guy.
Yeah,
his peripherals were really good. He's also never been a guy who's been able to stay healthy.
Yeah, he can't stay on the field. I mean, I honestly think for me, the guys that I would want to trade for, just for combination of factors, control and safety, I'm of the mind that I would go after Stroman. Stroman's my guy. I think Stroman's my favorite trade target because he's not a rental, and I think he's good. Do I think he's great? No, I don't. But I think he's a good pitcher. I think he's like a number three starter, and with the control, that's the guy I'd trade for. Only because there isn't a guy, unless there's someone that's available that we just don't know is available. Maybe there's a guy who's better than these guys that's actually available. We don't know it. That's different. But of these pitchers that we're talking about, the five guys or so that we know, technically, I'm saying no in quotation marks, are available. I think combination of pitcher and contract, I would trade for Stroman if I had to pick. But
I can understand that.
I don't know. I mean, there's no right or wrong answer, I don't think. I mean, the only – because even Bumgarner, I mean, you could make the argument he's obvious. The best pitcher. I mean, yeah. Bumgarner's probably the best pitcher out of this group. He just happens to be a rental. So – there's an argument for him
and again with a weird no trade hang up.
There's a lot of factors.
Yeah,
no question. I'm just saying, like, just pure performance. Just if you ask me, like, which guy of these five do I want on my team for the next 3 months? It's Bumgarner, I think.
I don't even think it's the slam dunk there.
No, like, I'm not saying it's slam dunk. That's what I'm saying. I think it's like not. I don't think it's a slam dunk. I think if you ask me though, take everything else away and pick one of these five guys to just add to the Braves, I think it'd be Bumgarner. But that it's not. I'm not saying it's Bumgarner absolutely slammed the door. I think it's Bumgarner. But the problem is people that think that it's an absolute no-brainer and he's by far the best option and he's an ace and all this stuff. I don't view him as that. I do think that he'd be the guy I'd choose for safety. I think he's the best pitcher available, but he also has the worst situation because you have a rental plus the no-trade weirdness and all that. So
yeah. It just and adds I don't think the prospect price, given his name recognition, is going to be everyone talks about it won't cost much to get him. I'm much less scared. I think if it didn't cost much to get him, they would have traded him already.
I agree. I think they're going to get more than they should, which is, you know, power to the Giants for getting more than they should. But if I had to ask,
I just don't want the Braves to pay. Yeah.
Yeah. If I had to guess, they're going to get a return that's going to make people like you shake their heads. People that know prospects. I'm not a prospect expert by any means, but I think I can see a Keith Law column coming that says they overpaid for Max Muldaur, whoever it is, whichever team it is. And if you're the Giants, that's what you should try to do. So
yeah.
You don't, and by the way, you don't have to trade him because the Giants are like semi in the race, which is weird. Another conversation for another time. That's probably enough for now, just because unless you have final thoughts on deadline stuff, just because we've gone longer than I thought, but I think it's interesting to talk about.
You know, I don't see a lot of people that move the needle a whole bunch. I do see some guys that could have improved the roster as long as the Braves aren't overpaying. Beyond that, I don't have strong feelings on this trade class. I don't see a guy that like this is the guy I would target. It's just kind of like him. You know, there's guys that make sense at certain prices and guys who don't at others. So
I hope there's a honestly for the content and for enjoyment and excitement. I hope there's someone that we don't see coming that gets traded.
Get Greinke out of nowhere or something.
Greinke's available. It's just that he's incredibly expensive.
The Braves take all of his money. You know, then all of a sudden,
I mean, if that, he's that, okay, that'll be by the way, and just to say this out loud, if he's on the list, he's the best pitcher available. Just to say that out loud, I think Greinke's better than Muldaur. So
yeah, and that contract,
he's
is
just
brutal.
Very expensive. Yes, and that's the only. Just to add to the fact that every single one of these pitchers has a weirdness to them. Minor, it's the injury history. Boyd, yes. It's the performance. Stroman is kind of the weird guy in the middle, I guess. Bumgarner's contract, Greinke's contract. There you go. Briefly, Eric, before we get out of here, we're going to spend a lot of time on the baseball, but let's talk about what happened this week real quickly. The Braves went 3-4, which is not a disastrous result. It got a little dire in the middle when they lost three games in a row, and there was some frustration in the fan base. But I do think the Sunday night baseball win quelled a lot of the negativity that was going to be out there if they lost that game on Sunday night, I will say. What were your big takeaways? I mean, my big discussion point that I want to at least talk about at some point is Kevin Gausman. But aside from Kevin Gausman, who I guess we'll finish on, take anything away from what happened here? I mean, Max Fried leaving, I guess, is something we have to talk about, too. The blister stuff with Fried's a little bit scary.
I mean, the blister stuff with Fried isn't really, like, a new issue. And unfortunately, that's not a good thing. But at the same time, it's not something I'm, like, super concerned. Like, he's going to be gone the rest of the year. All of a sudden, there's another guy that they have to, you know, figure out who's going to be in the rotation type thing. You know, just kind of, you know, get that blister healed up. And I assume he might have to miss another start by the end of the year. But it's not something that's, like, super concerning. I just kind of felt that the Braves got, like, super unlucky. Like they were like two bad innings away from being 5-2 this week. So, you know, they just against Soroka, there was a bunch of like, you know, little bloops and flares and ground balls that found holes, and that was like one inning where he was bad and where it was bad. And I don't know. It's just I didn't read too much into it. It's just kind of like, well, you're going to get a little bit, you're having these little bit unlucky streaks, and there's going to be times where they get you, you know, in the National Series, for example, there's one game that was terrible, and then you lose a couple games, you lose a close game where things didn't really go your way. You win a close game where you had to kind of come back and, you know, take care of business in the bottom of the ninth. And then in Sunday, you throttled them. So it's just kind of, I was glad the split happened because that's four games that the Nationals had against the Braves that they could have used to close a 6.5 game gap, and they did not do that. You know, as long as you're splitting and kind of hold and serve with the Nationals, just keep playing the way you have been playing, and it doesn't really matter what the Nationals do. You don't want them to take three or four from you, or, you know, even sweep you, because then things that all of a sudden this turns into a real race in a hurry. But, you know, after that, just kind of, you know, let the Phillies, who are trying their best to kind of hang around, let them try to fight with the Nationals some. The Nationals are going to have a tougher schedule coming up. You know, I feel like that as long as this next series against the Nationals goes reasonably well, it doesn't even have to go, like, you don't have to sweep the Nationals. If you sweep the Nationals, I think the race might be over. But if you can just, you know, not let them gain any significant ground against you over the next week, then I feel pretty good about the Braves' chances. Beyond that, it just felt like there was some, you know, the Braves had gotten lucky in some of their wins, and it just felt like some of that was just coming back, and, you know, you lose a couple of games that you probably could have won, or some things really didn't go your way, but there's still some positive developments you see. You know, Ozzie's playing really well. You see the Acuna's kind of starting to wake up a little bit, too. So overall, I'm happy with where the Braves are at. I wasn't super concerned. You know, when you lose some of these games the way they lost them, you know, it just is what it is.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, two blowout losses this week. I don't worry too much about those. It's going to happen in baseball. And yeah, and they're fine. I mean, 3-4 this week was not a great result, but considering the competition level, it's not disastrous to lose four out of seven games to playoff caliber opponents. That's fine. Keeping their distance from Washington is fine. They split that series. That worked out just fine. Looking ahead, this schedule this week, Kansas City, the two-game series we talked about earlier, and then Philly for three. Only a five-game week is helpful just to get some rest. Taking things full circle from what we talked about earlier in the pod, having a five-game week is always beneficial as we get into the dog days here. But, I mean, I don't know. I don't have grand takeaways. The Braves are still in the 95% range and all the metrics to make the playoffs, somewhere in the 80s to win the division. They're still in very, very good shape, and there's more time to talk about the nuts and bolts of all of that later on. Kevin Gausman, though, is an interesting piece. I've been pro Kevin Gausman, I think, overall on this podcast last year, even before they acquired him. I was pretty high on that move as sort of a buy low, kind of. He was obviously bad early on this year, and that kind of led to his whirlwind tour away from the Braves for a couple of months. In fact, I believe he hadn't started a game since June 10th. He was really good on Sunday. It's one start, but he does have talent. And by the way, everyone's favorite stat, his FIP this season is lower than Max Fried's, which is always funny. I don't put too much stock in that, but I do think that, even we said this at the time 2 months ago, I think you and I did and Scott did, his peripherals were always not as bad as his numbers were this season. Does that mean he's a good pitcher? I'm not sure. I think it's possible, though, that he helps you and that he's just the guy he was last year. The guy he was last year, even if you include the Orioles stint from last year, he had a sub-4 ERA, and he was better than that with the Braves when he arrived. If he's just the guy he was in 2018 for the full season, that includes Baltimore, he's a number 3 or 4 starter, and that really helps you. So I guess my question to you is, what do we take from this one start, considering it is only one start, but it's hard not to be a little bit optimistic, even if you have your guard up with him because of how bad he was early on in the season.
I mean, I would have preferred to see a breaking ball that would have made me, but he was supposedly throwing a cutter. Like I didn't have the chance to watch the game on Sunday, so I couldn't evaluate how good his cutter was or anything like that. And if you're looking at game day, I mean, game day is, that's the one pitch that game day can't really identify very well. The nice thing about a cutter is that it makes your fast. The one thing that's about Gausman, the splitter's always been good. You know what I mean? But he doesn't really throw up for strikes very often. So with his fastball, he throws it hard, but he was getting hit hard. You know what I mean? And when you only have those two pitches working for you, if you can pick one and one of them's, something that you can really hit hard, then that becomes problematic. But if you have a cutter, it has super similar action and somewhat similar speed to your fastball, but it doesn't let the guys, right off a splitter. It doesn't necessarily let them sit on their fastball because it's a change of pace pitch too. So I like that as something in his option, but a true breaking ball would make me feel a lot better about Gausman. And this reporting that, he's been working on this breaking ball and down in Gwinnett, et cetera, et cetera. At the end of the day, he has to throw it in the games for me to go, okay, he has more of a repertoire than what he had. Cause being a two pitch guy, what he was early in the year, and one of your pitches wasn't very good, that's not going to do it. So Am I happy that he performed well? Absolutely. He looked awesome on from everything I understand, he looked really good on Sunday. But it's also something where I'm like, the repertoire is going to have to be there because major league hitters are really, really good, and you're going to have be able to change pace and be able to fool them a little bit rather than let them sit on something so they can tee off on you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to claim to be a pitching expert, so one start of Kevin Gausman, I can look at his pitch FX and I can watch with my eyes for one start, but I can't draw conclusions in a way that a lot of people could. So I will not claim to be that kind of expert, and we'll see how he looks in the future. But again, pedigree wise, there is some reason to believe that he can be a helpful major league pitcher. And if that's just what he is, that would be huge. I mean, it does not take away from the need the Braves still have for upgrades, but having Gausman be solid would be helpful. I don't know. That's kind of all I have. It's not really a hot take or anything, but that's until we see more, that's where I will stay with it for now, I guess.
Yep. Only thing I want to add, and it's kind of folded back into the trade deadline stuff, I think if Fulte has one more good start in Gwinnett, I think it's likely that the Braves wouldn't trade for a starter, and that is, I don't know if concerning is the word I would use.
I mean, Fulte's the ultimate wild card. Actually, I'm glad you brought it up because we haven't talked about him on the podcast yet. Today, he's the wild card because, not everybody needs to be reminded, but he was the team's number one pitcher last year by a wide margin and was an all-star. And was good, and I'm not sure that you can rely on that, but if he's a major league quality starting pitcher, it'd be a lot easier for the Braves to attack this deadline, because you can kind of shift your focus maybe to the bullpen, or maybe not have as much urgency. But that's an internal evaluation thing for the Braves with Folty. I have not seen Folty in Gwinnett. Maybe you have, because you watch minor league baseball more than I do. But you know, he's the guy who, you know, Gosman was one weird dynamic here. Then you have Julio, and then you have Foltynewicz. Those are the guys are, I mean, we know what Soroka is. Freed has not been great lately, but we know he's going to be around the rotation. Everything else, including all the young guys we haven't talked about, from Kyle Wright on down, who was awful in his start this week. Everything else is up in the air, and it comes down to internal evaluation, because if they think that Folty's going to be a useful piece down the stretch, then maybe they don't trade for somebody. And I don't love that, but it comes down to what they think about their own guy. I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, he's looked okay in Gwinnett, I would say.
I'll defer to you on that one, my friend.
Well, I mean, look, the start before his last start, he gave up 4 runs in 5 innings on 9 hits, and that's obviously not great. But then the start afterwards, you know, only 4 hits, gave up 1 run, you know, struck out 6 in 6 innings. So again, there's just, at the end of the day, what I've been saying for a while, I'm not sold that Folty is completely healthy. And, you know, the bone spur thing in his elbow is kind of a known issue. And if he can't throw his slider reliably for strikes in a way that also doesn't get him teed off on, then that's a really tough sell for me. It really is. Now, but that's literally, I mean, the fastball still looks okay. And you'd think that if he has that slider working for him and he can fool people and it doesn't back up on him, then, you know, he's a really good pitcher. But if he doesn't have it, I don't think he has, you know, a changeup or, you know, a backup plan that he can keep people off his fastball. And this is a league that will punish that. You know, he is the type of stuff that if he's not on, then he will give up home runs. He will, like, it will not be pretty. So that, I agree with you. It's just kind of an evaluation. The Braves have to decide, do we think this the guy that we are, who is working down in Gwinnett and is working hard to get back to the form that he was at, will that guy exist in a way that is productive for this team? Because if he is, then I don't think the urgency for getting another starter is as high. But if he's not, and you're not sure, then I think that you make a move, and I think that will tell us a lot about what's going on with Folty going forward, too.
Yeah, if it's me, again, with limited information, I am not going to let Folty dictate my plans, but I don't have the information. So I am going to trade for a starting pitcher if there's a reasonable deal out there. I think it's a priority. I think it should be one. The bullpen is also somewhere they need to upgrade, which is why all of the theoretical Will Smith Bumgarner combination packages have been out there forever, and now it's, you know, now Ken Giles is out there apparently as a Stroman comparison. But yeah, it's, they need both. If it's me, if you want to win the World Series this year, you need both, and that's my opinion for now. Because other than Svorzak, there's not been a lot of great bullpen work happening either, which we can save for another day. But indeed. I don't know, man. It's they need some stuff, but I don't want to be too negative because they're also really good at baseball this year. The Braves have been very, very, very good. It also comes with a different conversation because very good versus can beat the Dodgers reasonably in a series is different. So that's it's not just the Dodgers either. It's obviously if you beat the Dodgers because it's baseball and that can happen, you still have to go win one more series to win your actual goal. So the high-level conversations are just different. We all kind of are acknowledging right now the Braves are very, very, very good. And that's a great spot to be in. They're better than I thought they were going to be this year. No question about it. I was wrong about this team. They're better than I thought. But now we talk about different stuff. And it's an expectation game, but it's also one where we're going to frame conversations, at least I am, through can they win the World Series. And let's move help them win the World Series. I think for now, they're a huge division favorite for a reason. They have a cushion, and they're very good. And now we see what happens now.
Yep, and it's all just cost-benefit analysis, because at the end of the day, does Marcus Stroman make you – how much more likely does that make you beat the Dodgers in a series or to advance in the playoffs? Because I think
that – it helps you, but not that much. I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough.
Here's the thing. Other than Mike Soroka, who do you trust on the mound for 6 innings in a playoff game right now?
Just run Soroka out there. Like, you know, give him the Bumgarner treatment. Just run him out there for 3 games of the series and, you know.
Just get in the Wayback Machine and have him out there every day.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly if I could, if I would.
Shouts to Mike Soroka. You're your guy forever.
Always.
If nothing else, you nailed that at the highest degree. So congratulations again.
I was dug in on that one for a while. You know, being right in Acuna helps a little bit too, but you know, that wasn't as much of a reach, because I mean, anyone who actually watched that guy play.
Yeah, he's a stud, quite obviously. All right, man. Well, we've done enough. We've been longer than I thought, as we always end up doing. But Eric, anything else, anything going on in your world? Anything you've been writing, or anything we should be looking out for? Other than Road to Atlanta, which you're already subscribed to. Hopefully, if you're subscribed to this feed, you will also get Road to Atlanta. If you're not subscribed, please go ahead and do that. But other than Road to Atlanta, which is always fun, anything else you got going on, or Twitter, or anything else?
Nothing really in the works. Just kind of like wait and see what's going on with the trade deadline. We had our prospect list roll out, which was a lot of fun and a lot of work. A lot of changes, guys from the draft that are in there now. So that was kind of our big project. You can follow the podcast at Road to Number 2 Atlanta on Twitter. And that podcast generally comes out every Thursday or Friday. For whatever reason, I forgot to post it on Thursday night this past time, and I had to post it on Friday. But
I saw it went up during the day, and I was wondering when you recorded that.
Actually, I had recorded it a little bit earlier in the week, but I just had forgotten to post it. But yeah, generally it's a later in the week podcast versus this one, which comes out generally at the beginning of the week. We talk about prospects, and we've been doing a lot of mailbag type stuff, which is I think we're going to continue to do. We like doing that. Allows for a lot of varied topics, and you know, as opposed to just talking to the same four guys every week. So it's, you know, it's a lot of fun. Make sure you're listening to that podcast. We really enjoy making it. And, you know, after that, we're just kind of in a bit of a holding pattern and kind of seeing what's going on and how things are going to play out down in the minor leagues, because there's a lot of interesting things happening, particularly with the lack of roster movement, and I'm not sure how that's going to be fixed, so we're kind of keeping an eye on that.
Yep, plenty of content coming in the future. Just for people's planning purposes, I am planning to record a new pod in my normal Sunday night time slot next week. If there's a trade before then, we'll see when it hits and how it hits. I'm on the road, but we'll see if I can react. And if not, we are going to record Sunday, and maybe we'll force a trade into existence by our recording. We have a pretty funny track record when it comes to deals hitting right after we record on Monday. So
we are
going to record
Monday's
Sunday.
Usually the day.
And then after that, depending on when a deal or deals hit, I will come back and record content. So we'll have plenty in the future between this pod, Road to Atlanta, etc. Please subscribe to this show, and that gets you both right in the same feed. So go ahead and do that. Eric, thank you for joining me as always, my friend. And we'll do it again very soon, as often.
Oh, absolutely.
Everybody else, again, one more time, subscribe. One more time, subscribe. Subscribe, rate, review, all that stuff. And we'll see everybody at the very least.
Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. It's hard to imagine a world where we leave future generations with fewer rights and freedoms. Since the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills aimed at blocking people from getting the essential sexual and reproductive care they need, including abortion. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves access to care. And with supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit DrinkSmartwater.com.